Kate Campus here with a classic. It's a novel called Orlando King, published in 1968. It's written by Isabel Colgate. Hi, Katie.
Good morning.
I had not heard of the book or the author.
Me either.
Until when? What alerted you?
Well, this time last year for Christmas, I subscribed my mum to this book service from Haywood Hill Bookshop in London, which I'd heard about. When they choose, you tell them what sorts of books you like and what you've read recently, and they select a book, her one is every 2 months, and send it to you. And they have been absolutely amazing in the books that they've sent out, because they've all been things that were spot on and that she's really loved, but they weren't obvious. None of them were, you know, they didn't send her the new Hilary Mantel. They weren't all the things that you would have got yourself. They were all just a bit off to
the side.
That's
what you want, isn't
yeah,
it?
And so this is, they sent her this. And when it came, it had a quote from Eleanor Catton on the cover saying, you know, she should be a household name. It's just been reissued by Bloomsbury, and and Eleanor Catton's doing a TV series. She's writing a screenplay of Isabel Colgate's first book. So Isabel Colgate is obviously having
The Blackmailer.
Yeah, is obviously having some sort of a moment. But yeah,
she's,
I haven't heard of her either.
Another heyday. Heard of it. I had, and I said earlier, I had seen the movie The Shooting Party years ago.
Yeah, no, I haven't. But
without realising that it was based on a novel that she wrote.
And I mean, I know not everyone cares about spoilers, but I do. And I never read introductions. Well, thank God I didn't read the introduction to this, because literally the first paragraph...
She spoils it herself.
But the first paragraph of the introduction, not of the book, but of the introduction, is literally a summary of everything that happens in the plot. In this book, the volume I have is actually the three novels of the trilogy as one edition. That's what the new Bloomsbury paperback is. So
yes,
three books worth of plot. She tells you absolutely everything that happens, the person introducing it. And then she says, these are not spoilers, for in her extraordinary account of the turbulent middle years of the last century, Isabel Colgate intends the Greek myths of Oedipus and Antigone to be apparent from the very first page. And then she quotes the book's opening, which is, we know the story, of course, so nothing need be withheld. We are here profoundly to contemplate eternal truths with ritual like the Greeks, with dream like Freud. Let us pray.
Not exactly a big giveaway.
No, not a huge giveaway. And I mean, I sort of feel like I've got a little bit of Oedipus memories going on. I'm not quite sure I can remember Antigone, but I
don't.
Well,
just to remind
you. Still not a total giveaway.
At the end, Orlando King says, I have killed my father, he thought, and driven my wife mad. I have helped to lead my country to its destruction, yet I never meant any harm.
Well, and to me, all of those, had I known them before I started the book, would have been massive spoilers. So,
would they?
Yes. I don't want to know if
but
people are going to...
But it's the destination. It's the journey that's interesting,
well,
right?
Well, maybe. But I still don't want to know if people die or kill themselves or whatever. So in the interests of those who, like me, don't like to know those things, I think this is a really great... especially in the paperback edition where you've got the three books in one, and it's a lovely, lovely edition. I think it's a great summer read or a great summer gift, but if you don't want to know everything that happens, then just, you know, don't read the introduction and don't listen to us. So having said that, it took me a while to get into it. It's quite a slow burner at the start, and in some ways I've kind of accidentally bookended the year, because I started this year, our first book this year was The Heat of the Day, which is set around the same period, and it's also a sort of book where World War II and the Blitz is sort of right at the centre of it, and yet it was almost never mentioned. So it's kind of this thing where you've got this huge, you know, you've got probably the greatest narrative set piece of the century, of our culture at least, happening there with the Blitz and the whole, you know, and the whole of World War II. But the focus is on the relationships, the marriages, the careers, the private moments. It's a very interior book, and I came to absolutely love that about it.
She's best known, I think, for writing about the twilight of the Edwardian era and World War One. And that's what The Shooting Party, I think, was about. So this is set in 1931 onwards.
And she sort of touches on that, like she, there's a conversation early on where he says to his, I think before they're married, says to his wife, probably you're sentimental about the young men you used to go to dances with. And she says, they were all killed in the war. Everyone's sentimental about them. I suppose so, he says. Poor Judith, was your life blighted? No, I enjoyed it, really. It was all quite dramatic, you see. And I got a real insight there into how much she's written about that kind of World War One, and that, and the same with The Heat of the Day, that sense of both the golden sort of nostalgic looking back, but also the sort of brittle fragility of it all.
Yeah. The tone of it, there's something about the style of writing And it's not like Anthony Poles Dance to the Music of Time, but it's that kind of... Mm. It takes you to the surface, and it's up to you to figure out what's going on underneath, right?
Absolutely right. I kept thinking, when I was thinking for an analogue for it, I kept thinking of Poland. It's not really right, because it's a deeper book in many ways than those books of his, but there is that sense of, there's just a sort of glassy clarity to the way that it's written. It's funny without ever being laugh out loud, but I mean it can be very, very funny in a way that's hard to quote, but just very, sort of not even really comedy of manners. It's just very funny and perceptive about people, but it's also very sort of compassionate and forgiving about people. There's really only one character in it who you find totally annoying and self-indulgent, and he sort of comes to a sticky end and has a kind of long self-pitying letter that he writes about himself. But it's just a very unusual sort of emotional tone. And one of the reviews that's quoted, I don't know if it's a contemporary one from when it came out, says, there's not a word or a piece of dialogue out of place. And it is like that. It's like the incredible skill that she manages the different characters and time periods is, it's very impressive.
There's a bit towards the end, he's married to Judith, and for some reason, they've been to a party. Judith starts to cry. He put his hand over hers. Darling, not in front of Manners. Manners was their chauffeur, from whom they were separated by a glass panel. I think you're a little drunk, but don't worry. He had noticed once or twice before that Judith could leave a party apparently completely sober and only let it appear when they were alone that she was nothing of the kind. He put this down to some kind of training and admired her for it. Never mind, he said. We'll have you in bed in no time. And that's that. I mean, people cry, you don't go there, right?
There's such a restraint about, and restraint is such a sort of, in that English aristocratic
good
country house kind of way.
I teach on the edge of these people will start raving bonkers.
Yeah, exactly. But then there's some incredibly emotional moments as well. And for you as a dog person, there's a couple of really amazing dogs that appear in the book, and one dog that gets killed, and that's just, it's just heart-rending, and there's some beautiful scenes of it earlier. It's a beagle, and how it can carry eggs in its mouth without cracking them, and that's all very beautiful. And then there's an old dog who's the friend of one of the characters, and he says to his dog, it sort of comes up at a moment, nothing particular has happened, but it comes up and sort of puts its head in his lap, and he leans down and says to his dog, you smell nice. She wandered off, and he says to the dog, why is life not more often good and great and glorious? Why am I not a better man? It's those kind of things that someone will only say in this book to their dog. No one would speak like that to a human being. I found it really, really beautiful. And I mean, like all English books, really, it is about class, and it's about the class system. But it's also kind of, there's a sort of mournful but sort of the elegiac quality to it is quite uplifting. It's not a sad kind of elegiac quality. It's a sort of brilliant, sparkling, beautiful, like when spoiler alert, there's a few suicides in the book. In the woods where Judith had once tried to kill herself, the garlic and the bluebells were both in flower. The white stars of the garlic were scattered in most profusion by the stream. The bluebells grew under the elms and hornbeams on the slope of the narrow valley and faded into a blue mist toward the summit. And just those senses of the country houses and the woods around them. And he, I guess it's everyone knows the Oedipus Rex, has a major vision issues in the latter part of the book after some injuries during the war. So he goes to places where he can't see the view, but he remembers the view so well of that country house that he can sort of picture it in his mind. And, it's a very, of course, to us, totally alien world. And yet it feels so familiar from all those English books that I've read.
Yeah. I suppose that's right. That's the, the white heritage coming out, isn't
it? Yeah, totally. Because, of course, it's all totally alien to me, but it feels somehow very cosy and familiar. Even the scenes in Italy, when they're renting this villa in Italy in the sun, I sort of feel like I've got stacked up sort of images of a portrait of a lady or, other books that I've read of what it is to be an English family that's renting a house out on the outskirts of Florence, which, is not really... equivalent to my childhood, but I just love it.
I wonder why she's come back into vogue now.
Yes, I wonder about that too. I mean, I feel like probably one of the reasons she went out of Vogue, and I mean, we should say she's still alive. She's born in 1931.
Late 80s. Yeah.
So, I mean, probably one of the reasons why this and The Heat of the Day maybe didn't achieve that canonical status is they are very female books that focus a lot on female characters and by women authors, and the kind of focus on the domestic rather than on the sort of war-y, plotty stuff. Although, having said that, there is a sort of Forrest Gump quality to this book because it covers sort of appeasement, the Blitz, the Suez Crisis, the Cambridge spies, you know, there is a lot of sort of history in there.
Of course, Orlando King just kind of finds himself in the right place at the right time, knowing the right people in that Forrest Gumpy way.
What's
as
that?
Well.
That's a Zelig, isn't it? That kind of. So he does. And he's sort of, I mean, the whole thing is quite vague. So I'm not sure that I knew for a lot of the book exactly who was who. It was quite easy for me to get various people a little bit mixed up with each other. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know why its time has come now. But I definitely feel like she's having a moment, and I feel like this book is going to be a book that people are going to pass on to each other, copies of the paperback.
I think I saw somebody suggesting that we too feel as if an era is passing or past, or something to do with COVID or,
Well, especially for the poems, of course, because between Brexit and COVID,
it's all over for
really,
the poems.
Yeah, it's Twilight of the Empire all over again, isn't it?
Certainly. I read that she was asked about whether she went to university, but she said, no, I've got no education at all. I mean, she barely went to school.
Really?
Yeah, but she went, she married a, publisher, sort of a chap, and I don't know, just...
Well, and she's a literary agent, isn't
breathed.
She?
Is she?
I believe so, yeah, that she worked as a literary agent as well as writing her own books. But, yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know, people who can write in this way where she jumps back and forth in time in this way that I find quite extraordinary. Like at one point, Orlando's having an affair with a woman called Angela Payne, and he says to himself... And this is, in the 1930s. And he says to himself, Angela Payne, not even a pretty name. And after he had seen buildings crumble and streets of flame, he could hardly even remember what she looked like. So he hasn't been through that experience yet. So we're in the present of 1930, looking forward to the 1950s, of what it's going to be like for him looking back to the 1930s, having had the experience of the war. Uh-huh. And he does it. She does it over and over again, where characters imagine themselves in the future, looking back on the current moment and not remembering it perfectly, which is such a sort of amazing sleight of hand. But it's also,
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, but it's really deftly done. And once you notice it, you start seeing it pop up all over the place. But it gives a sense to me that's a real... It has such realism because... Of course it's like that. When you remember your past, when you're living, you're never living in one time. You're always casting forward to the future, thinking back on the past, imagining what it's going to be like. We've all been doing it with COVID, thinking, oh, we'll look back on this time as X, Y, or Z, And we won't look back on it as that. We'll look back on it as something we can barely remember because that's what our brains are like, And we'll only remember the one thing that we've got a photo of or that they keep putting on the news. So, yeah, in many ways, like a lot of my favourite books, like David Copperfield or so many books, it's kind of a meditation on memory and on how what you remember, the stories you tell about yourself, are probably much more important than, the building that fell on you during the Blitz or, where you end up. And I mean, some amazing, amazing death scene. I don't want to spoil whose death scene it is, but probably my most favourite and beautiful death scene I've ever read is in this book.
Really?
Yeah, and just the smell of marjoram. So you come away from this what could be a tragic death scene, and it's actually so beautiful, it's so sensual.
Yeah.
It's lovely. And then it's kind of the end of one book in the trilogy, I realise later, and then the start of the next book is absolutely amazing, and it's talking about how the person who finds the body will remember that moment and how it will be different from every other memory they have because every detail of it will be sort of stored in their body in the way that sort of traumatic memories are. Yeah, just love it.
Have you read the next two yet?
Yeah. So I read all three are in the paperback edition.
And did you enjoy them all equally, each part?
Well, I didn't realise until I finished them and read the introduction that it was three books.
Oh, I see.
So I just thought it was one book and three huge chapters, and I thought, wow, it's amazing the way that she moves through time. There's no chapter breaks, there's no asterisks, you're in and out of
different
characters.
So it all works as one big novel.
Beautifully, yeah. Yeah, and that's the paperback Bloomsbury edition that's been reissued as with the three books together.
Well, I'm very grateful to you for drawing my attention to her. I'm going to try and get hold of that big fat trilogy.
It's a winner for Christmas reading.
A winner for Christmas reading. Thank you, Kate. Any other winners for Christmas reading off the top of your head?
Well, the Ali Smith quartet of novels that ends with summer and whatever order the seasons go and work back from there, I absolutely loved. And even though summer is kind of about COVID and Brexit, which just sounds absolutely awful, it's not. It's beautiful.
All right. Thank you very much. I wish you a happy Christmas. Thank you. And hope to talk to you again in the new year.
Indeed.